Welcome to episode 17, books. Whether you devour science fiction or you read psychology for classes,
or if you are a fan fiction writer, or you have a resistance towards admitting that you like to read a certain book like me, you're welcome here. This is a judgment-free zone as we talk about our relationships with books and how we read them today.
Stay tuned. Welcome to the Witchy Wit Podcast, where we look at life through a witchy lens. I'm Kimberlyn.
I'm Leilani.
At Witchy Wit, we explore current events,
ideas,
music and books,
and experiences in ways that recognize energy and life in everybody and everything.
We are both real witches.
And we bring two real perspectives through the lens of our different ages,
races,
and backgrounds.
With a healthy skepticism for what we have been told is true, our conversations are raw, candid, and vulnerable.
Join us as we cast a spell to uncover what we each know is true in our intuitive, witchy selves. Welcome to our circle. We're so grateful to be sharing this space with y'all today. Before we dive into our conversation about books, I wanted to take a moment and just check in and see how each of us are doing, what's on our minds outside of the podcast. So before we get started, Kimberlyn, what's going on with you?
Well, first of all, I've been having a really great day. What I'm going to talk about is not life-threatening, but it still shows me, even with well-meaning people, how far we have to go. Mm-hmm. And so the situation is this. A number of our students and a couple of our professors have been really working on a land acknowledgement. And for people who may not know, a land acknowledgement is basically a statement intent and support, I guess, is the best way to think about it. That acknowledges that most of the places that we work in and live in and churches and whatever institutions are on land that had been taken from the indigenous population. And recognizing that even though we may be good people and we want the best thing for our country and the best thing for all the people, that we're coming from a history of institutionalized racism and people suffered and are still suffering from it. So a land acknowledgement basically just says that we're on land that belonged to, and then you put in the name of the group. And the thing about a land acknowledgement is that it can't just be a facile statement. We call that performative allyship or performative support, where you just kind of do the performance of something as opposed to really doing the work. And so to create a land acknowledgement, it's supposed to be kind of an arduous process in that you come up with some thinking and then you actually meet with either people who represent an indigenous population where you are or the descendants of them, but you really work with the people whose interests you might be kind of representing, right? And so it's not just this is just a facile way of saying it. It's not just white people saying we're sorry that, you know, the Indians were kicked off this land, but you really work with people. So you, in your acknowledgement, you're actually talking about the impact that these actions have had. Anyway, so to make a long story less long than it's already become, a number of people at my college worked on that. And then in talking about it, they had told some of the people who were in charge that you know, here's an example of what we're going to be doing, but it's going to take us a while to come with. And I think it took them almost like a half a semester to really come up with the verbiage that they came up with. And it was really long, but it's supposed to be long because, you know, the idea is that this racism has for 200 or 300 years has tormented, oppressed a number of people. And so, you know, you can take 15 minutes to acknowledge some of that, yeah. Right? So to make the story a little bit less long, it just took it took them a while to create it. And then they were told that it was too long and that perhaps some people who would sit down and look at this and maybe figure out, this part wasn't said, but was implied that maybe some people would sit down and, you know, figure out where they can, you know, make it a little bit shorter and so it can be more useful. And I'm flabbergasted. I'm, you know, one of the reasons I'm talking so much is I really don't have words for how I feel. So I'm just using the words to describe this. And it's just so, and I know the students had to have felt totally devastated by this, because they thought they were going to have support for it as it existed.
What an example of, this just popped in my head. What an example of a real life example for your students to experience.
How? Like, exactly. Yeah.
And I'm so upset that they have to experience mm-hmm. that, but like, that's it right there. Like,
it gives them a little taste of what these people mm-hmm. who have suffered for, you know, for whatever, however many years, because my university is on the land that they used to own, or the land that they used to live on. Mm-hmm. This is just a little taste of the humiliation and the oppression and the, if not deliberate, vindictive behavior, at thoughtlessness, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's the thoughtlessness, because these are not bad people. These mm-hmm. are not, these are people who want, you know, a lot of these things. They want that understanding. They you know, but they just don't get it. They just don't get it. And you know, sometimes I'm just tired of trying to help them get it. Uh-huh. You know?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. and I don't think they get that they don't get it.
That's, yeah. There's so many getting, right? There's so many not, so much not getting there. Yeah.
There's a lot of not getting.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what's going on. That's a little bit of a frustration that's in my life right now. But, you know, we will survive. How about you? What's going on with you?
So my, the thing that is really shining in me right now mm-hmm. is, so I'm a, one of the things I do is competitive dancing. Like, I know, you know, you've been to the dance.
I've watched you win.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You've been to some of our social dances. And then pre-pandemic, I would travel all over the United States with some loved ones, and we would compete. And you and I even went mm-hmm. to, mm-hmm. You remember that?
In Portland.
In Portland.
Yes, yeah. We went to one.
We even went mm-hmm. to one in Portland mm-hmm. while we were up there. So, you know, the pandemic hit, and I haven't danced. And it's, and... it means a lot more to me than just like, I haven't done that in a long time sort of thing. Like, it's a very important part of me, and it's very important in the way that I feel my feelings and function. So I haven't danced since the pandemic, and a friend of mine, got vaccinated, and then I was vaccinated, and then, he experienced the 2 weeks, and then I waited the 2 weeks. And then I was nervous, and you know, and then but finally I felt okay, and so we met and we danced in his garage,
and
it was
so amazing.
It was so wonderful. But here's the thing that like I've traveled with him, and I'm super comfortable with him, and he's a really nice guy, which is really great, because I was messaging him and I was like, okay, I'm gonna come over. I do not know how this is gonna go. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if I have forgotten everything, or am I gonna be super rusty. Or also, I don't know how this emotionally is going to go. Like, am I going to just, like, start weeping as we dance? Like, poor guy. Like, you know.
I think back to our last episode yes. where we talked about grief and you did.
It has yeah. happened before. So, you know, or am I going to be happy? I have no clue. Mm-hmm. I've never been in a pandemic before. Mm-hmm. I don't know how this is going to feel. So I went over. I gave him the spiel via text. Like,
just a warning.
Be advised. Yeah. I am very emotional in general. Like, I do not know how this is going to go. Then I got there, I gave him the spiel again, I put on my dance shoes, which was huge for me. I have a dance bag. Yeah. I haven't pulled my dance bag out of the closet in over a year. I pulled out my dance bag, took it with me.
You have to blow the dust off?
I did.
You wouldn't, but.
I was like, and then I put on my dance shoes, and I was like, whoa, I'm wearing my dance shoes. And I danced, and I felt joy.
I'm so happy too.
Now, here's something interesting, though. I did feel a bit embarrassed, a little bit vulnerable, a little bit seen in like a vulnerable way, because I'm not used to being that close to someone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I totally get that. You know, we have our 6 feet, and you know, we don't shake hands anymore. Mm-hmm. And so, I totally get that.
Yeah,
I
went from 6 feet, no shaking hands, to, like, this is West Coast swing. Like, we're, like at one point in time, his chin like bumped my nose. I got really close to him and that was an accident. Like his chin bumped my nose. But like, that's how close we are, you know?
Yeah.
And like, not only are we not shaking hands, like we're we're dancing. Like it's very, you know?
Yeah.
And so I found myself like, whoa, like just being kind of like taken aback by it, which is interesting because that's one of the things I love the most about it. Like I love this shared space.
But for a year you have deliberately, so it's not even a matter of, it just happened. For a year you've been really consciously avoiding getting that close to someone, you know, that's not in your pod, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just a lot of things on a lot of levels. And I'm so grateful that I did it. And it was, by the way, I didn't forget.
I didn't think you would. But you know, it's, I'm wondering if, now this is going to sound a little woo-woo, but I'm wondering if because of our distance, we've allowed our auras to kind of expand a little bit so we can still get some sensation from each other. So you were like literally in each other's like space and in each other's auras.
Yes, I for sure felt energy and in a way that maybe I sensed it, and maybe it was more clear to me because I'm so not used to it.
That maybe it existed before, but you were just, it was nothing.
Just kind of like,
yeah, whatever.
Like background noise, like I'm so used to this white noise that I didn't sense it, but like now I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Wow.
But I'm so happy.
Yay.
I'm back to dancing, at least in this way. I'm not ready to go to the social dances yet.
Are they being held?
Some, not the club that I taught for, but a different one is having them. But I'm not ready for that yet. But I am ready for more garage sessions.
Yay! Congratulations!
Thank you.
Take a little video. It would be cool to see.
I will.
So we're talking about books, and I am so. This is one of my. As a child, we'll talk about this in a second, but this is just one of my favorite topics. I'm so excited to be able to talk about this and to talk about this with you. And I thought maybe we could just start, kind of talk about our relationship with books and how we feel about them. Would you like to share?
Yes, I would.
Good, I'm glad.
So my undergraduate degree is in English literature. So I love literature. I don't like talking about books.
Wow, those must have been some torturous classes.
I don't like talking about books because to me, books are really personal.
Oh,
And I find that whenever I get into discussions with people about books, it becomes really didactic, or preachy, it doesn't feel like a conversation to me. So I don't talk about books very often. Now I'm excited to talk about books with you. But in general,
this is going to be a short episode.
Right. So that's it. Thanks all for listening to Witchy Wit. Have a great day. But I don't like it. And I also think I feel similarly about music. People, which is also why I was a little worried about our music episode, because people just like want to tell me what they like. And it's like, and for me, it's so personal. It's about what's best for me. It's like clothing or a food choice. It's not just because I like it, you'll like it. And So I'm excited to talk about it with you, but that's kind of the energy I'm bringing into the episode.
Well, that's good to know. So, when you were younger, what was your relationship with books?
So one of my very first memories is struggling to read.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's one of my first memories is being a little kid and bringing, you know, those like paper, those really thin paperback books with the really thin paper pages with the page, with the pictures, with like very small amounts of words on each page.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those like early readers, I remember bringing those home from school and dreading it because it was hard. It was hard. So it's one of my first memories of like struggling with something and reading was very hard for me. I don't have memories about overcoming it. Obviously I was an English major, so I was okay.
Something switched some at one point in your life.
But yeah. I do remember I loved reading. I'm an extrovert and I'm a very physically active extrovert. So I don't exactly have a lot of sit down read time, but I've always read and I've always enjoyed reading. Specifically when I was in middle school, R.L. Stine, Fear Street.
Yeah. Yes.
I loved those. I devoured them. And there was a set of books called the Fear Street Saga. Side note, they were all about, it was all about witches.
I think I knew that, but thanks for reminding me.
I loved it. And they had like, and I read it so much and it was like this old this old, like, set in the old times, and like it was their family and generations, and like I had like a giant sheet of paper in my room, and I like wrote
the genealogy.
Yeah, I wrote out the genealogy, like I wrote out the family tree. I was like,
that's amazing.
I was like,
you were in it.
In it. Mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. in it. Mm-hmm. And then I went to college and got my degree in English, but that's when it changed for me, because mm-hmm. then reading became almost like a job.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so my relationship with books has not been the same since then. Mm-hmm. And then as a teacher, I read a lot of essays. Mm-hmm. As an English teacher.
Wait, it's not the, it's so not the same.
It's not the same, but like, yeah. But I kind of was done with reading. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time mm-hmm. I read, mm-hmm. you know, 160 essays, I was like over reading.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't want to read anymore. So it's, I have a confession that mm-hmm. I've read more books this year than I have read probably in a decade.
Wow. Well, I, you know, every time we're talking, you have a wonderful book recommendation. So, yeah, you are, you do. So I didn't realize this until just now when you told mm-hmm. me this. I just assumed that the Leilani I'd been talking to about books and you bringing up things the past year was mm-hmm. the Leilani, right?
Nope.
Well, see, I've learned something about you. This is amazing.
I do think I project differently.
No, I made assumptions because you were an English teacher, so it has nothing to do with. I projected something onto you just because I just knew who you were.
No worries.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my readership in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Different, totally different journey.
I love that about us. I love how we're so different.
Two different perspectives. I was an avid reader from. I just always remember reading. And I did have some children's books. I never had, you know, we had the readers, like, well, we had fun with Dick and Jane when I was in school. So it was a slightly different type of reading of material. But my mom didn't buy me a whole lot of children's books. I remember I had the Happy Hollister series. It's a family of five children. And they went on different adventures.
Hollister is a clothing store.
I know. The store, when I first saw the store, I thought,
oh, wow. And then, do the Hollister come there?
And then I said, no, Kimberly, calm down. but you know what I read a lot, and I don't think, I don't know if she knew this or not. I read her books. My mother didn't have time to read either, because she was raising us and working, you know, two jobs and whatever. But, she got the Reader's Digest books. And so I just remember just ripping through those. I mean, I guess, I don't even remember. I'm going to assume that one came a month or whatever. And there was two in there, two in each book. And two different books in each book. And they were abridged. They weren't the full thing. But they did. I never knew that they were abridged until, you know, years and years later when I realized Reader's Digest. These are digested.
Yeah.
So... So I thought I was reading the whole thing. So, but that, and you know, she belonged to a couple of book clubs, and I knew she was doing that for my sister and me, because that was not really her jam. But I read a lot. I read a lot. Some for escape, you know, just, you know, my childhood wasn't bad, but it was just, you know, when I read, I could be out in space, or I could be at the court of King Henry VIII. And wait, are you ready for the... My sister and I were pretty strange children. That's all I'm going to say.
That's already been verified by okay. by your stories.
Okay. So one of the things that we did was my mom had got the series of Shakespeare plays. And so my sister and I would read a play and take all the parts. Like, so I mean, we only did like the really super juicy ones. Like, we did Macbeth. Because double toil and trouble.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, girl.
And this
yes.
is like you're younger? Like, this is not like, no, you, no, like, I think I
was,
age.
No, I think I was like 8 and my sister might have been 5 or something.
What?
Yes, yeah, yeah. She was so much smarter. Like, she could read Shakespeare when she was 5. I was reading it when I was 8. She was reading it when she was, because I made her, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, so.
Were you one of the witches?
Of course. Double boil. I mean, we love that part. And we were like, get rid of that witchy voices. Where are you going, sister? Oh my God. We acted it out. You know, we read it. Mm-hmm. We'd read through it and make sure, you know, we knew what's what. And we didn't know. I would say if we understood a tenth of what we read, mm-hmm. that would be a lot. Because it's Shakespeare, right? And mm-hmm. we were girls in the hood, right? 8 and 5. But we got the drama, even though we didn't understand a lot of what we read. We were acting it out, probably totally wrong, but that's okay, you know? So anyway, I said all of that to say that for me, reading was this exploration. It was me getting outside of myself and just being in different places that were not, you know, Newark, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons why I love reading is that, to me, it's a study of the human experience. And that's why I didn't realize that, but that's why I became an English teacher. It's a study of the human experience, and then like that's what I'm doing in my classroom. Like that's the hidden curriculum that I was always teaching, was let's get into these other people's skins and walk around in them and experience what they're experiencing, and then bring that into our own personal experience.
I love that. What did you call that? The hidden what?
It's the hidden curriculum.
The hidden curriculum. I love that idea. That because it's helping them to be more human, right?
Mm-hmm.
To kind of figure out, okay, that's not me. This is me. Oh, wow, this is me. Why? You know, so really it can be highly self-revelatory.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when you read Sandra Cisneros and you learn what it's like to be a Hispanic woman growing up in San Antonio, like, I don't know what that's like, you know, but we would read My House in the Morning, you know, and then that's like how I would learn more about other people's experiences.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. It's so funny because I can't remember if I had a genre that I really liked reading, but I remember, again, I'm dating myself. When I was like maybe 5 or 6 years old, I was seven, when Star Trek first premiered, the original show. Or maybe I was 8. And I remember seeing like science fiction. I mean, seeing worlds that's totally, not just, you know, New York City or Hollywood, but a totally different world. And that's when I discovered science fiction. And oh my gosh, that's really when I started to like just sit and read by myself, not play with my sister and stuff like that, but to sit and read. And that was amazing for me, because then I could be in the skin of someone who's totally different from me, like an alien, or, you know.
I'm imagining you put down the Macbeth play so you could watch Star Trek. I'll be right back.
Yeah, keep stirring, sister.
Keep stirring, sister. When shall we three meet again in thunder, lightning, or in rain?
Look at you.
When the hurly-burly's done. When Star Trek is done.
Dun, 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 dun.
I may be a Macbeth fan.
Look at you. Oh my gosh. Okay. Anyway. I mentioned discovering Star Trek and learning about science fiction. And that, I would say, of my favorite types of genres, science fiction, fantasy are the top for me. Those are, if we go and look at maybe not the number of books I have, but those are the books that I read a lot. I remember, I lived in Newark, New Jersey. We had one of the most, one of the deepest and richest libraries, for states, better than New York City, but than a lot of other places in New Jersey. And just the branch that I went to had an incredible science fiction and fantasy. I don't know if they called it that at the time, but sections. And I loved reading that. That, I have to say, during my teens, I just devoured those books. And I want to say it kind of colored the way I grew up. I think that gave me permission to be a little bit more woo when I finally gave myself permission to do that. But I just remember, you know, reading about all of these places that people, you know, people, and I'm making quote signs here, people with, you know, three fingers, or people who, in one book I read there, pregnancies were only 7 months. And how, you know, just what did that mean? What were the implications of these things? And just like turning page after page after page, both of short stories and of novels. And oh my gosh, it just takes me back just even talking about it. What kind of stuff did you like?
So I'm not a big fan of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really like it very much.
Well,
I just feel feeling like a negative Nancy today.
No. But I'm just picturing what were your English lit classes like when you were in college?
Well, I teach for public school, so they tell me what I'm going to teach.
Okay. Well, there you go. No. Okay.
I mean, I slid some stuff in on, actually, now that I think about it, I did, I had to do what I had to do with the curriculum, but I would slide in a lot of poetry and nonfiction. Mm-hmm. To connect it with current events and also with psychology of understanding characters. So that I never really thought about that before. I just kind of did it. But
that makes so much sense.
But now that you bring it up. But I mean, I really enjoy a lot of canonical literature. I enjoy reading stories like Death of a Salesman. Like I remember being in class and reading that in college and just being like, this is awesome, you know? And I had this one really transformative experience with this piece of work called Everyday Use. And it's about a quilt. It's about a woman of color and having a quilt that's been passed down in her family, but they store it in a frame and she wants to get it down to use it everyday use it, but it's in a frame. And it's just all about the experience of what we do with our history and our lineage all these things and how we put them aside and frame them. And I remember reading that and just it blowing my mind. So it's not that I don't like all of it. It's just, I prefer nonfiction, but I do have to say, I love To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
So much. I even brought my book. And so when you look at this, what do you,
oh my gosh. Oh, look at all, I'm looking at all the post-its. Oh my God. Well, first of all, it's an old hard copy. Oh, wow. And boy, do you have each page marked. Wow. Oh my goodness. Harper Lee. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think I had the blessing of being able to teach it over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I got to read it a lot, but, they released, Go Set a Watchman.
Oh, the sequel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The sequel-ish. Mm-hmm. And that I have not been that excited for a book. Finding out that they were going to release it, and then it took years, and then counting down until they released it, and then going and waiting in line for them to release it, and then getting my copy and reading it, and it was so fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it sounds to me that you do like fiction. You do like certain types of fiction. It just, you know, it's like anything else. If it doesn't jazz you, it doesn't jazz you.
And yeah, it tends not to jazz me, but there is a lot of great stuff out there, but it's not where I want to put my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's interesting that you say that. And I'm so glad that you did, because I find when talking to people about books that often they want to project something about their reading because they feel it says something about them. And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's one of those things where I've learned now to stop worrying about what people think about what I do. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, back in the dark ages, before the printing press, people looked down on science fiction because it's genre fiction, right?
Oh.
And so, yeah.
That's so not my experience. Is that true?
Well, not anymore, but because there are so many literary type writers have created these masterpieces that are, but growing up it was, I mean, Pulp Fiction, you know, they, before my time, this was actually before I was born, but you know, they, it was called Pulp Fiction because a lot of these were published as serials in magazines.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it was only maybe in the 40s or 50s that they started publishing, maybe 60s that they started publishing hardcover copies of science fiction books. Yeah,
wow.
most of them, and that's why they're kind of looked down on. Most of them are just paperbacks, whereas in literature, most books come out in hardcovers, and then they come out later with paperback versions of them to save a little bit money. But I was reading them back before they were respectable and the whole bit, and I would try to, you know, oh well, I do read, I don't know, Jane Austen or something like that. And finally it's like, screw it. This is what I like. And this is what I enjoy. And I do read Jane Austen too, but what I really like now, we're going back to read the books that I read when I was 12 and 13. And Jane Austen is one of them too, you know, because I read it a different way then. Mm-hmm. And now I'm reading it in a total, and I'm reading it also colored by how I read it then too.
Aww.
So it's a wonderful experience for me. It sounds like you've kind of lived that because you've reread some of the books that you were talking
about. Some. I tend not to reread books because I don't know.
You don't care.
I don't want to. But like my sister is like she's a bookworm and she always has been a bookworm and she has like bookcases filled and she has comfort books that she goes back to like I go back to my teddy bear, you know? So I definitely honor that, but that's not my, I tend to treat books more like, more like academic. And then I like, I take notes and then I like write the notes in my journal. And then if I need to, I'll go back to them and I'll flip to the page to find it. But, I don't really reread the book. Them so much.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, and it's, I think so much of it is the emotional coloration of the experience, right? And so for the fact that it's comfort reading says something about the reading, right? So, yeah. So, well, tell me more about, you said that you prefer nonfiction. Sounds like,
I do.
Yeah, you want to talk a little bit more about
that? I love nonfiction books. And I think there's a fine line between, like, podcasts and nonfiction books for me, you know. Is the news not one long, never-ending book?
So I
listen to a lot of political podcasts, but we'll talk about that in another episode. But I love nonfiction books, and I love reading books about psychology. I love reading books about sociology. I love reading books about biographies. And I love, my favorite books are like the, where psychology and personal growth meet. Like those are some of my, those are like, that's where I get really like, give me some data and then give me some personal stories. And I'm like, woo, you know, like I'm just getting really excited about it.
Yeah. I do have kind of not a love hate relationship with personal development books, but, I really like them. And then I also, I'm leery of, you know, once one book comes out, than the bandwagon of all these other books that are very similar to that. So, but I just remember one of my first personal development books that I loved. This was, I want to say 20 years ago, was Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Have you heard of that?
I've heard the phrase, but I've never even heard of the book.
Oh, the book is phenomenal. And it's just basically about, you know, living an, we've talked about living an authentic life, and it's talking about living an authentic life, that you're going to be afraid and push through that fear, because when pushing through that fear, you often get to that part of you that you really wanted to get to.
Wow.
It's amazing. I'll think of the author's name and I'll put it in on the episode page. But incredible book. And so that was a while ago, but I really enjoyed that.
My first nonfiction book that really got my juices going was when Bad Things Happen to Good People. By Kushner. And that was assigned in a religion class for my undergrad. And I remember reading that book and it blowing my mind. And, you know, like, I'm sure that there are other books that are more nuanced than that book. But man, like that, I just remember reading that and being like, this world is complicated. This world's good and evil are complicated. And this world is complicated and there are no answers. And I am 18 and I think I have all the answers, you know, and just being like, what, you know, my brain was just scrambled eggs.
Yeah. It's one of the, when I read that book, it literally for me was, I was in the right space. I probably passed that book, you know, tons and tons of times before. And I was finally in the right space to read it. And then it came to me and I read it and it was kind of the same thing. I think I cried a lot because there were certain things that I just found allowed me to breathe, you know?
I had a moment where I was at, we have an art museum in our city, and I was at this art museum and they had an exhibit for Howl, Ginsberg's Howl.
Yes.
Which, so I am just like, I remember going through all my literature classes in college and we finally got to like, transcendentalism is like my jam. And I was like, my people, you know? Nature.
Yes.
All of y'all are witches, even if you don't know it, like you're all witches. I can't speak for you, but I'm speaking for you. And then we moved on to the, and we got to the beat poets, which was just like their there are people like this, like there are people like me that like there was a thing, you know, and this, like I grew
and
up
you
in,
missed it.
I grew up in rural Missouri, yeah, right? Yeah, I missed yeah. it, and then I did wasn't even in anywhere where we could find it, you know, because I was in rural Missouri. So I just the awareness of like finding this, and so then this exhibit comes through town, and I go. And they had these headphones so I could listen to Ginsberg read Howl in his own voice. Wow. And I just stood in front of it crying. Just like
I can imagine.
Just crying like this has gotta be what like people feel like when they're listening to sacred text. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh, I've seen the best minds of my generation. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just like crying.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's a powerful poem. I think I read it years and years ago, but I literally just reread it maybe since the pandemic, mm-hmm. I remember getting it. And then one of my students, I'm teaching a class on creative thinking right now, and one of my students, that was one of their favorite pieces of writing, and he read part of it. I was like, wow.
So good. Wow. Yeah. And then one time I was backpacking through China, and I was in Shanghai, and I'm just like, like walking down Shanghai, China, and I look to the side, and on the side of a building is some of Charles Bukowski's poetry.
Oh my gosh.
Painted on the side of the building, and I was like,
whoa.
I'm literally on the opposite side of the planet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're here with me.
Your people. My people. Wow.
Do you like nonfiction?
I do. I kind of go through phase. So here's the thing. I joined a book club. Now it's close to about 20 years ago, but when I got here to San Antonio, because I really just finished grad school and all that, and so I had basically just been reading a lot for my dissertation, and so a lot of 17th century sacred music, and you know, essays and articles and books about Rome and things like that, and
so exciting.
Well, you know, like, hey, look, that's my jam. So. So I joined a book club because I said, I don't know how to read fiction anymore. Mm. And so I joined that, and, you know, and they read a lot of different stuff that I'd never read, because I read science fiction and fantasy. And, but then that kind of gave me permission to actually open myself up to reading again for enjoyment instead of for my dissertation. And that's when I really started reading books on spirituality, not religion. Mm-hmm. But spirituality and what that looks like. I started reading personal development books. I'm trying to remember what else I might have. I don't know if I... And this past year, my university has created a... We created in our university, Clarity, an anti-racist pedagogy group. Which has totally, I'm kind of at the end of my teaching career now, but it has given me the motivation to rethink everything that I've done in the classroom. And in terms of how I've been perpetuating racist institutional modes and approaches, et cetera. So I've been reading a lot of that, and it's been really, really fascinating.
I would love for you to pass along some of those books to me. Because, so I was in the classroom for 7.5 years before I moved to this other type of classroom. But I was an English teacher in a traditional classroom for 7.5 years. And I taught To Kill a Mockingbird every year. And when the protests in Charlotte happened with the tiki torches, the white men and tiki torches, mm-hmm. I remember thinking, this is To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
This is actually a scene in To Kill a Mockingbird. And it's happening now. And part of the reason it's happening now is because I did not do my job like I thought I did.
Wow.
And I'm not saying I'm a bad teacher or whatever, but like I realized in that, like it was a split second in that moment when I saw the picture of them holding the tiki torches, I was like, this is happening because me and a lot of people like me, I was doing what I thought was good, but I was not doing enough. And since then, I've really dived into reading a lot of nonfiction books about how I would say doing my job better. Mm-hmm. So I would be totally down.
Oh yeah, totally. I'll send some off with you tonight. Yeah, we had this one of the authors talked with us. Was it just this past week or 2 weeks ago? And one of the things that I thought was so, and this is kind of veering a little bit to the left, but one of the things that he talked about in terms of you know, the kind of, it's not necessarily racist, but just the ways that we perpetuate the way we were taught, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that a lot of universities have are accommodations for students for various reasons, health or, you know, mental health or whatever. And the most common at my university is time and a half for exams. Like whatever time that they would normally give, you'd give them another half of that because they just require more time and usually a quiet place, et cetera. And here's this question. He said, well, you know, why don't you just give everybody time and a half? Or why not give untimed exams? And I just thought, I don't know. I mean, and there may be reasons why you will or will not, but it never occurred to me to give a test in a different way than I got tests.
Yes.
I mean,
thinking about something that we take for granted as being the way that it is. But here's the problem is you don't know that it's the way that it is and that you're taking it for granted until someone points it out.
Exactly. And that's why you read these books. Anyway, so his book, I'm going to make sure you take that. But it's just amazing that, and this is why racism continues and sexism and all the isms, this is why they continue, is because we are so aware, just like that person I mentioned earlier in our talk today, are just so we don't get when we don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I love about books in general is that they make me think something that I would not normally think.
Oh my gosh. That's so true. That's why I love nonfiction, though. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, also fiction. Because of the human experience. I like that.
Well, also fiction.
Okay, clearly I'm noticing I have a judgment on fiction. Anyways, okay, I'm going to journal about that later. But that's what I love about reading, mm-hmm. is that I'm thinking things that I would not normally think.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I tell you a book that totally just recently, it's one that I've read this year, that blew my mind, mm-hmm. and I wish that I would have read it a bajillion years ago. Mm-hmm. I wish instead of it being my 742nd personal growth book or whatever, that it would have been like my first. But it's called The Body Keeps the Score.
I don't think I know that.
And it's amazing. It's relatively new, but it's all about trauma and the way our body holds trauma, whether it be from previous generations, from our childhood, current trauma. And then it talks all about how our body holds on to that and how our body affects our mind and how our mind, body, and spirit are all connected to this body, to previous body, like to our ancestors. And for me, it's the perfect intersection of science and storytelling. Mm-hmm. Now, he doesn't give a shit in his stories, and he will just, there's no trigger warnings, and he'll just be like, he'll be like, scientific study, blah, 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 blah. Here's this really triggering personal story, you know, and I'd be like reading, and I'd be like, dude, oh my God, you know? it's pretty intense. So mm-hmm. it's like not something that I would, you know, joy read a lot, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But man, it just it blew my mind. And I think I know a lot about psychology, and
because you read all those books.
I do. My master's degree is in psychology, and like, so I feel like I have like a pretty good understanding, and this book just like it blew my mind.
Isn't that exciting? It was, when that happens,
I love it when that happens. It's the same way like Party Rock, when LMFAO released Party Rock, I loved that song, and it was so fun to like get so excited about that song and to mm-hmm. go to the club and like hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about that book. Like yeah, it's so yeah. fun to just have my mind just like totally turned into excited. Spaghetti.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is amazing.
Thank you.
One area of nonfiction slash fiction.
Depends on who you ask.
Who you ask. Yeah, exactly. That I love, that I adore, is mythology. And I love both the nonfiction explanation of, you know, who the Greek gods and the Norse or whatever, but then I love fictional versions of these tales. The biggest thing for me is, you know, that we have these larger than life characters, but then they have like human smaller than life or life size issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And how they deal with destiny. Are you? Do you have any myths or things like that that you're fond of?
So, don't get mad at me. I'm not a big fan of myths.
So the answer is no. Like, but thanks for lobbing that in my area, in my direction.
But I do appreciate it as a witch and as a story for transformation. I really enjoy it. I don't enjoy just reading myth, but like I went to a certain island in Hawaii that they don't really have a lot of tourist stuff on. And before I went to Hawaii, I bought this giant book of Hawaiian mythology because I wanted to be able to honor the gods and goddesses. So this is like, is it myth? Is it fiction or non-fiction?
Yeah, right, you know? Exactly, yeah.
So it was definitely non-fiction for me. And I was reading it so that whenever I went onto the land, I could really vibe with those. And I visited a temple and things like that, and I just wanted to vibe with it. That's my extent of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is that we talked about myth, I don't know, a couple of episodes ago, mm-hmm. and you had mentioned the Hawaiian volcanoes or something.
Yeah, Pele.
Pele. Mm-hmm. But then, it's from one of the maybe Disney films.
Oh, yes, Moana,
the shadow,
the god. Yeah, the goddess, the goddess that has the two sides.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things. So I, one author that I feel works with myth so beautifully, so brilliantly is Neil Gaiman.
Mm.
And I just absorb anything he writes.
Isn't he the one that does like the gods, like in
American Gods?
Yes.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm. So American Gods is one of his books that's now a Stars.
Oh, cool.
Or Amazon, you know, it's one of those television shows. Yeah, a number of his things have been. He's Coraline. He wrote Coraline.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So a number of his things have been either filmed or made into television shows. And so, but the way he deals with myth is in a very human and very sensitive and gentle and beautiful and scary way. I mean, he also writes horror. I mean, this is a horror book and this is a this book. All of his books have all of these things in it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think I actually met him. I actually first read him. He took a trickster god, Anansi, who is an African god, and wrote a whole thing about. But I can't describe how he does it. If you haven't read Neil Gaiman, go read Neil Gaiman. But he just takes myths and he makes them so real and so. So why don't you believe this? You know. Then another thing he does, he has a whole series of graphic novels called The Sandman Tales, where he. Oh my god! Oh my gosh! I read these things. I read I think like five of them in one night.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. He's just amazing. So anyway, he's one of my favorite authors.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we're segueing from nonfiction into favorite authors. He's one of my favorite authors because. He deals with all of the things I like, humanity,
mm-hmm.
and you know the things that make us such wonderful people and such shitty people.
Yes.
And then destiny, and you know something that's so much bigger than humans, and the fact that that's not necessarily always good.
Mm-hmm.
when bad things happen to good and bad people, and in really bad and horrific ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I when I read him, I feel so alive.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching you talk about him, and also you like acted like you knew him. To me, that tells me though that you feel like a really intimate connection to him, to his body of work.
I also read his Twitter tweets. So he's one of
we've established that you're on Twitter and I'm not.
Yeah. Well, he was the reason I joined Twitter was because I wanted to read his tweets.
Oh my god, it's so nerdy.
I know. I know. Well, here, let me just say this really quickly. Because we have this huge, big book festival here in San Antonio every year. It would just pass this past, it's usually the beginning of April, where they bring all these authors to town. As a rule, I don't like to meet authors. I don't like to meet musicians because if I love your song, I love your song. And half the time, these people are like, it can be kind of crappy people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to know that. I just want to be able to enjoy your song or read your book or whatever and not know that you're real shit.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one author that I know I want to meet. I know I want to meet, you know, but for the most part, I don't want to read them. Yeah.
I have a, so I'm a big fan of children's literature and young adult literature. I love it a lot. Even as an adult, I really enjoy reading children's books and YA books. There is a really great book series, a mythology book series called The Girl God. And yeah, it's really cool. And they have this whole series, and I have a good number. I maybe have like 8 of them, but they're children's books and it's all about myth. So for example, they have one called My Name is Inanna. So most of them are My Name Is, and then the name of the goddess. And then it's the goddess's myth told in a way that's really simplified and shortened for children. But then it takes it into like, so what does this mean for women? What does this mean for growth? What does this mean for transformation? There's one for Medusa. I love Inanna's story, so I really enjoy that. But they're written by witches.
I'd love, could I borrow some of them from
you? Yeah, I love them. I got them because of the summer camp that I work at over the summers. Mm-hmm. But I also got it because in our circle, sometimes we have story time. We have stories sharing. Mm-hmm. And I thought it'd be really fun to
I think it would be lovely
to read those.
Yeah, yeah. I would love to see them.
They're so good. I think it's the Girl God series. The authors is Trista Hendren, and it's thegirlgod.com. She's a witch and she's pretty awesome.
Oh, fabulous. Good. I would love to after grading is done.
Yeah.
I'm reading nothing until grading is done, but that sounds fabulous. It really does. And I'd love to see whatever you have from it. And I don't read as much children literature, but I do read YA stuff. There's so much of it in fantasy now, right? Mm-hmm. Fantasy and science fiction. And we're not quite sure why. I remember having this discussion once with someone, because I teach a science fiction class, and why so much YA is dystopian. And I think, you know, part of it is that, you know, young adults and teens are figuring out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so a friend of mine said they're looking around and they're saying, this world sucks. Mm-hmm. And so as the characters deal with the dystopia, it helps these people, you know, people who are reading the story to deal with the world around them.
I think that sounds 100% mm-hmm. legit to
that
me.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, what teen doesn't feel like they live in a dystopia? And what teen doesn't want to escape to a fantasy?
That's mm-hmm,
or and mm-hmm. and science or science fiction. Like mm-hmm. what teen doesn't want to get away? I mean, that's we're designed as teenagers to want to get away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Otherwise, mm-hmm. we'd all stay in our mom's basement forever.
what is that from Beetlejuice? My life is a room, a big dark room. yeah. No, it makes so much sense. It's just that my teen years are so long ago that. I don't know, maybe it wasn't a dystopia, and maybe I looked around and was like, oh, life is so beautiful. Who knows?
You peaked as an 8-year-old with Macbeth.
And it was all downhill from
it's
then
all
on. Yeah,
now you're
yeah.
into, like, sacred literature. What is it? Sacred 17th century?
sacred music, yes. The nuns, my nuns. So who are some other favorites of yours?
So my original, maybe this is just my bad attitude about, I don't want to talk about books, but I was like, I don't have a favorite author. Okay, what author have I read a billion books by?
Yeah.
Brené Brown. Would I say yes. Brené Brown is my favorite author? Yes.
Yeah, well.
I think I even wrote on here, I think I edited it, but mm-hmm. I wrote favorite author, and then I wrote ? Brené Brown? Oh, yeah, see? Fave author? And then I like went back and deleted it. And was
you
like,
just don't want to commit, do
I,
you?
I don't know. I don't know what my deal is. But I love Brené Brown, and mm-hmm. I love, she's someone who, I love all of her books. Mm-hmm. I read them all. And I would fangirl if I met her.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yes.
My best friend and I have often talked about, like, because we know that she lives in Houston, vacations at Lake Travis. She's lived in San Antonio for a little bit. So we've been like, if we show up at Lake Travis,
you'll meet her.
Like, could we just, like, hunt
okay,
her down?
Yeah.
And be like, hey.
Don't mind us. We're just fans.
But I do love her, and I love mm-hmm. all of her work, and mm-hmm. I listen to her podcast. I like watch her specials when they're released on TV. As I say all this, I'm realizing like I should just, she's my favorite author. Okay. I'm
Commit.
Just gonna,
yeah.
Brené Brown is my favorite author.
Oh, did that feel cleansing?
No, I'm just like upset about it right now. I need some time to process.
Okay. You haven't gotten there yet. Okay.
Rising Strong is my favorite book by her.
I don't know. That's the one I don't know.
It's all about when you get the shit kicked out of you, how do you stand up and rise from it?
Well, I can imagine that that would be a really that book would
It's a good book.
Yeah. Wow. No, I really like her too. And I'm not as familiar with her, but I know a little bit about her, you know, her stuff. And I've read one, but it wasn't that one. But now you've reminded me that I do like her, and you know, I'll add her to the queue. I mean, I'm not even going to tell you how many books are in there. Like my Goodreads. Are you on my Goodreads?
I'm not on Goodreads.
Well, you can go in and just for all the books in the world, you can put want to read.
Uh-huh.
And then people, you know, like I have a couple of friends on, et cetera. Anyway, my want to read list, I think is like 900.
I'm sure it is.
So, you know, one day.
Isn't that Twilight Zone episode where the man gets locked in the room with all of his books?
No, I've never seen that.
There's a Twilight Zone episode where he gets, like, he never has enough time to read. And so the end of the Twilight Zone episode is that he gets locked in a room for eternity with all these books, but his glasses break.
Oh.
I know.
That's so sad.
It's very M. Night Shyamalan, right? What a twist.
And the O. Henry short story, The Gift of the Magi.
Oh, yes. Very, yeah. Just cut my hair off.
See, you know, we know our literature. That's right.
Look at us. Okay, I want to know who your favorite authors are. And I want to hear you nerd out about them because you're just so beautiful and shiny when you talk about them.
Well, I mentioned Neil Gaiman. I love Neil Gaiman. Ursula K. Le Guin is a science fiction author.
What a name.
I know.
Is that a pen name? Or is
no,
that
that's her real name.
Dang, girl. Whoever named her, she could have been nothing but great.
I know. She is. Well, her parents were anthropologists or sociologists. One was, I can't remember, but something like that. And so she writes science fiction, but she writes it through this lens of, you know, the observer learning about another culture. And so her book, I think the classic is The Left Hand of Darkness. Wait, I'm confusing that with the Conrad. No, I think it's The Left Hand of Darkness. And it's amazing. It's amazing where it's literally a culture where you're basically genderless until you go into kind of like a heat. And then that's when you express a gender. And often, like, if you're really close friends with someone or romantically inclined with someone, then you'll, like, if you both go in at the same time, like, I will gender as female or male or whatever you gender, you know, to complement each other. But it's just an amazing, wow. Yeah. So she writes, and then she writes short stories, and she writes, I mean, she's just incredible. And the thing I like about her is that every world is different. You know, she has this one, it's not a series, but they all kind of hinge upon this one kind of device, and they all kind of refer to that, but they're all different worlds. And oh, the thing that this is what struck me when I first read her book, a lot of her main characters have dark skin.
Wow.
Do you know how rare that is in science fiction?
I'm sad that I don't know that I don't know.
It's very, very rare. I don't know. I don't know who the first, like, person of color in science fiction was, but a lot of her characters are. And it's not like they're a black person or they're this. It's just like in passing, they happen to mention, you know, that their skin is the color of charcoal or something like that, you know. And that's what I loved about her. Still love about her. So she's one. James Michener, he wrote like the Tales of the South Pacific that the musical South Pacific is based on.
Oh, wow.
He writes historical novels, but he doesn't start like in the 1800s or whatever. So I read when I was driving back to New Jersey. So this tells you how long his books are. I listened to the audiobook of Alaska. It starts with the Mastodon.
Holy shit.
And then it ended at, I think in the 1980s. So you go through Alaska. I mean, but it's like, you know, so I know about the gold rush, but I didn't know how they treated the natives that were there, the indigenous people, and how the you know, the Russians and all of that. And so, I mean, but he does his research. It's just amazing. So he's one. And then really quickly, I know we don't have a new science fiction writer is N.K. Jemisin. She's an African-American woman who writes these brilliant books that are mythological. I mean, they have legends and fabled characters, and then they interact with people who we think are the real people, but you know, it's so, she peoples them so brilliantly. So those are some of my favorites. What about yours? But besides Brené Brown?
I don't really think I have favorite authors. I have favorite genres. Mm-hmm. Transcendentalism, the Beats are definitely up there for me. And yeah, I would say...
May I just jump in? It seems to me that you like a lot of poetry.
I love poetry.
Okay, so...
And here's why I love poetry. I love poetry because it is only... Let's say poem is X length. Mm-hmm. The poem... The process of reading the poem is X times 100. Mm-hmm. Because every word is potent. And I love unpacking. I love the unpacking process. It's just so fun for me. And that's one of the reasons why I love puns and like wordplay. Yeah. I used to read the Harper Handbook to English Literature, which had like all these different poetic devices in it. It's just like a dictionary, mm-hmm. but for poetic devices and mm-hmm. literary devices. And I would read that for fun.
Oh, that's so cute. I love this. I love this image that I have of you sitting down and, you know, turning the next page. You know,
I was like, I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
I didn't know this enjambment. What is enjambment? You know, and yeah, I read, like, yeah. I love the analysis that can come with that because it's just so packed full of magic, I think.
Mm-hmm. And ways of taking one word and doing so many different things with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
And like, there's one of my favorite Christmas movie is called A Christmas Story, and it's based on a book. Which I love, but just like even in the movie itself, whenever they're narrating, whenever the dogs come in and steal the Christmas turkey, he says the heavenly aroma hung heavy in the air, and like that alliteration, you know, of the H's, and my family laughs at me because I'm silly, but I'm just like, I love this. I love the literary devices. And then, like, they describe the lamp as the soft glow of electric sex. How is that not? I mean, that I'm just like, this is the soft glow of electric sex.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
For this leg lamp.
I know, the leg lamp. Yes.
I love that book. I love that movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So good.
This is amazing. I'm sorry to say that I create a picture of you in my mm-hmm. head. And it's so nice to, you know, kind of peel some of that away and actually see the real you, not the one that I think is you. So thank you so much for sharing this.
I thank you so much for listening. I'm embarrassed at the amount of resistance I have towards it. I'm sure that has to do with schooling. but I appreciate getting to talk with you about it. And I also like love that you are just so open about your obsession with science fiction and fantasy. And I love that you write. Like, to me, that's an extension. I see that as an extension of your adoration. Yeah. I love that.
Thank you.
You do Slash.
Yes. One day we'll have to talk just fan fiction. Because that's another thing that I read a lot of is fan fiction. But I read my own, obviously. But I read other people. And theirs is inspiring. Not only Slash, but, you know.
Is Slash a certain type of fan fiction? Are there different types of fan?
Yeah. So you can write Jen, which is... no relation, it's not relationship based. Like Harry Potter in the first couple of books would be considered Jen.
Is Jen like Genesis?
Oh, Jen, like Jenner, that's a good question. Jen, I'll look that up and get back to you.
This is I love language.
Jen, general, I don't know now. We're just so used to it. We don't even think about it.
It's okay. I'm just curious.
So it's Jen as opposed to... Okay, anyway. And then you have certain ships, mm-hmm. you know, like Harry, Ginny, so...
Ship is in relationship?
Ship, yes.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So Jen just means... Okay, truth in advertising. It's going to sound, because we're going to edit it this way, it's going to sound like I just answered the question, but actually we talked a whole lot and then I looked it up on the internet because I didn't know. So Gen is short for general audiences. It's the MPAA classification for films. And so we just use that in fan fiction. And it just means a work in which there's no relationships, either het or slash.
Okay.
Het mean heterosexual.
See, this is this whole world that I don't know about. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in a way, it seems like this reverence for books and literature. And so we can have an episode on fan fiction. I'm not lying. I have never read a piece of fan fiction.
Not a single piece.
Is there Brené Brown fan fiction?
I don't think so.
She goes to Lake Travis. She sees an adoring fan.
Okay, so here's the thing. Okay.
It's Leilani.
Here's the thing. So there's a fan fiction fest at Christmas called Yuletide, and that's for really, really small fandoms so that they can get some love too. And so these are all ones that on fanfiction.net that you can't have more than 1,000 fan fictions on there, and there's two places. So these are ones that don't have a whole lot of, so let me tell you some of the, oh no, I'm not going to now. Well, anyway, so the point I'm going to make is that I will write you a Brené Brown fan fiction because I love doing those little small fandoms. So I have to do some research though.
Okay.
I
just love that there's, and the internet is great for this, mm-hmm. but I just love that we can engage our books in a way that was not possible before the internet. And it's just so cool that there's these worlds. And me, a book lover, you know, living my life, teaching books, whatever. And there's this whole world that I don't even know about.
That's right.
And I don't even know the language of what gen or slash means, you know, until I hang out with you.
Yeah. But, you know, and the thing about it is, so one of the things, as we were thinking about our favorite authors, there's a couple of authors that I love, I have a love-hate relationship with. Some of their work is problematized for me, and one of them is J.K. Rowling, and that's because...
I don't know how to feel.
Yeah, well, not so much because of her,
okay.
But how she treats Harry. So if I lived next door to Harry Potter mm-hmm. in the first book, I would feel myself direly remiss if I didn't report his family to Child Protective Services.
Yeah, I'm a mandated reporter. I'd be, you know, making a CPS report.
Exactly. I mean, they kept him in a cupboard yeah. under the stairs.
Yeah.
That's abusive. And mm-hmm. I actually have another story that I haven't read because I don't think I can read it yet. It's a book about how these people kept a little girl in the closet, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's abuse, you mm-hmm. know. And at the end of, you know, he lives through these horrendous things. He never gets psychological treatment. Mm-hmm. At the end, you know, he's traumatized. In the beginning of the next book, he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so as a reader and as a fan fiction writer, I can live with it. Actually, I don't. I rewrite it. But, you know, it's one of those things where it makes for great reading.
Mm-hmm.
But in real life, you wouldn't let that happen. I mean, I wouldn't let that happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's kind of problematic. And then, you know, there's just all of her other stuff.
And let me say that sometimes I'm not fun whenever mm-hmm. I'm reading books. Cause I'm like he'd have PTSD. Let's just be honest.
Yes,
like, come
exactly.
on people.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, some of my students told me that I ruined some films for them because we were watching Beauty and the Beast. And I said, you realize that he's stalking her, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
And so they said, thank you, Dr. Monfort.
Right.
Actually, no, they brought that up too. So.
Oh, okay.
No, they were willing to discuss it, you know. So, but yeah.
Also, that's Stockholm syndrome. So let's mm-hmm. just talk about that too.
Oh my gosh! Yes. So yeah. Anyway.
We are no fun. You can't take us anywhere.
or you can take us, but don't ask us to talk about anything you love.
Don't ask us questions. We'll just be cackling in the corner.
I know. Don't mind us. We'll be fine. Anyway, so,
I do have a confession to make.
Yeah.
I have a secret, very small, but a secret collection of dictionaries. I enjoy reading dictionaries. Just take a breath on that.
I have to say, I am just really impressed with you. I really am so impressed with you. I love dictionaries too. I mean, I don't like read them necessarily, but once in a while, you know, you're looking for a word and you kind of stop.
Yes.
And you're like, what?
Yes.
And then you turn back a couple of pages. And so I get it. I totally, I get you. I see you.
Thank you.
I see you.
I particularly like dictionaries that are old
mm-hmm.
because I have a secret. It's not a secret. I have a passion for etymology. I love etymology so much.
And how we're, well, like you were saying with, you know, what's gen? What's
right.
gen stand
What does gen
for?
Mean? Like, I always want to know what words mean. And then mm-hmm. when people say words to me, I'm like, oh, that seems like it's derived from
and
this
you see
word.
The relationships.
And,
yeah.
and then they're like, shut up, Leilani. Like, I wasn't, you know, and I'm like, okay, talk to you later. I'm going to go look this up. And so I just enjoy, like, I have some like very vintage dictionaries, and I love looking at the way the words change. I love etymology, and I don't know that I've ever admitted to anyone that I don't even call it a dictionary collection. I just happen to have a few.
Yeah. She keeps them under her bed. Some of them open up to like one page. Wow. That actually, I'm pretty impressed. I'm really impressed. It sounds like you like making connections and things like that. That's
yeah. I love language. Had I had a different life, my favorite classes in my undergrad were linguistics classes.
That makes so much sense.
I loved linguistics classes and diagramming sentences and like word origins and I think that's why
amazing.
I love poetry. That's one of the reasons why I love poetry so much.
So you generally impress me just in general, but then I learn these little bits about you, and it's like, well, it's like you kind of trampoline even higher than you are than you were before, in my estimation. That is just so amazing.
I'm afraid of trampolines.
What?
I'm afraid of trampolines. You said I trampoline. Oh, I'm afraid of trampolines.
I'll spot you.
thank you.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, we'll talk about that another time. Anyway, how about we maybe read an excerpt from
excited about this.
Okay, good.
So one of my favorite things about being an English teacher, I'm not joking, is holding the book. I'm doing this right now in front mm-hmm. of you. Holding the book in my hand, opening it up to the page, and reading to me seems like such a sacred act. It's a sacred act.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited.
Yay! Thank you for sharing this with us.
Do you want to read first, or do you want me to read?
No, you have the book in front of you now. So tell us what you're... Yeah.
So I'm reading from a book called Untamed by Glennon Doyle. It's fairly recent, and I tend to not like books like this, I don't think. So I wasn't going to read it. And then my best friend, we do a thing where we read books, and we annotate them, and then we swap.
Oh, cool.
So then I read it.
So tell me, when you say books like this, what do you mean?
I don't know. Books that pop up on the New York Times bestseller list. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Trendy books.
It's a great book, and there's a lot of great books, but it's just, they tend to not be the flavor that I enjoy. So I don't really acquaint myself so much with it, but, she read it. She loved it. She kept telling me to read it. I kept being like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then,
yeah,
and then she's like, okay, fine. And so then she annotates it. She mailed it down to me. And then I annotate and I mail it back to her. And then she reread, you know, as we just do it over and over again.
Oh, so you do the same book.
Yeah, we do the same
book.
That's
so cool.
So 50% of these marks, like she wrote this right here. This
mm-hmm.
is Leilani.
Mm-hmm.
And she underlined it. So that whenever I read it, I'm like making the notes out to the side. So we have a conversation like that. I know with
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. That's like so, because you, unlike a book group where you kind of have to, where the conversation might go away before you've gotten a chance to really
mm-hmm.
think about stuff, you can cogitate and you can ponder and you can underline and, oh my, and then you get it back and then so that conversation can keep going.
Yes. I love it. It's like having, I get to have a conversation with the book and her at the same time.
That's amazing.
It's very extroverted.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So I really jammed on this book. She wrote a book called Love Warrior, which is super Christian and about marriage and sticking with your marriage. I'm just like...
Yeah, the man is the head of the...
it's just very... I'm being very reductive about it. But then she found out that she was gay and she had to make this really intense choice about... I mean, that's an intense choice in general, being married and then figuring this out, this truth out, and then having to change your life. But then she, like her whole career, you know, she had the New York Times number one bestseller about the opposite of that.
Yeah, being
you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then this book, Untamed, is a lot about that authenticity. Like
mm-hmm.
I would call it authenticity sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just down to jam with anybody who wants to talk about authenticity sobriety.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the section I'm going to read is for me, it's about what it means to be a phoenix. And to fall and then to rise.
Oh, cool.
So then I read it.
So tell me, when you say books like this, what do you mean?
I don't know. Books that pop up on the New York Times bestseller list. I don't know.
Trendy books.
It's a great book, and there's a lot of great books, but it's just, they tend to not be the flavor that I enjoy, so I don't really acquaint myself so much with it. But she read it, she loved it, she kept telling me to read it, I kept being like, okay, cool, yeah, and then yeah, and then whatever. She's like, okay, fine. And so then she annotates it, she mailed it down to me, and then I annotate and I mail it back to her, and then she reread, you know, we just do it over and over again.
Oh, so you do the same book?
Yeah, we do the same book. So 50% of these marks, like, she wrote this right here, this mm-hmm. is Leilani, mm-hmm. and she underlined it, so that whenever I read it, I'm like making the notes out to the side. So we have a conversation like that. I know.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. That's like so, because you, unlike a book group where you kind of have to, where the conversation might go away before you've gotten a chance to really mm-hmm. think about stuff, you can cogitate and you can ponder and you can underline and, oh my, and then you get it back and then so that conversation can keep going.
Yes. I love it. It's like I get to have a conversation with the book and her at the same time.
That's amazing.
It's very extroverted.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So I really jammed on this book. She wrote a book called Love Warrior, which is super Christian and about marriage and sticking with your marriage. I'm just like...
Yeah, the man is the head of the...
Yeah, like it's just very... I'm being very reductive about it. But then she found out that she was gay and she had to make this really intense choice about... I mean... That's an intense choice in general, being married and then figuring this out, this truth out, and then having to change her life. But then she, like her whole career, you know, she had a New York Times one bestseller about the opposite of that.
Yeah, being a,
you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then this book, Untamed, is a lot about that authenticity. Like mm-hmm. I would call it authenticity sobriety. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm just down to jam with anybody who wants to talk about authenticity sobriety. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the section I'm going to read is for me, it's about what it means to be a phoenix and to fall and then to rise. I'm just going to have you edit this out because it's going to take me a second to figure out what I'm going to read.
Yeah.
Because I just marked it with the thing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, give me a second. I don't want to hit it while you're talking.
Is this what I...
I'm going to take something to drink now.
Okay.
Take your time.
Okay, that's where I wanted to end, and then this is where I wanted to start. I am here to keep becoming truer, more beautiful versions of myself again and again forever. To be alive is to be in a perpetual state of revolution. Whether I like it or not, pain is the fuel of revolution. Everything I need to become a woman I'm meant to be next is inside my feelings of now. Life is alchemy, and emotions are the fire that turns me into gold. I will continue to become only if I resist extinguishing myself a million times a day. If I can sit in the fire of my own feelings, I will keep becoming. Consumer culture promises us that we can buy our way out of pain, that the reason we're sad and angry is not that being human hurts. It's because we don't have those countertops, her thighs, these jeans. This is a clever way to run an economy, but is no way to run a life. Consuming keeps us distracted, busy, and numb. Numbness keeps us from becoming. This is why every great spiritual teacher tells us the same story about humanity and pain. Don't avoid it. You need it to evolve, to become. And you are here to become. Like Buddha, who had to leave his life of comfort to experience all kinds of human suffering before finding enlightenment. Like Moses, who wandered 40 years in the desert before seeing the promised land. Like Wesley from The Princess Bride, who said, "Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something." Like Jesus, who walked straight towards his own crucifixion. First the pain, then the waiting, then the rising. All of our suffering comes when we try to get to our resurrection without allowing ourselves to be crucified first.
I loved hearing that, and I loved watching you read it. That's amazing.
I love it, too. Anytime I read, I feel like I'm reading sacred text, but I guess I think text is sacred.
Yeah. I had so many choices of what I wanted to read, and I decided to actually read the beginning of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, this was another thing that I read with my sister when we were little. I'm maybe a little bit older, I can't remember. But we memorized this. We memorized, I don't know, I think something like 28 verses. And we memorized it as kids. And so when I was going to choose something else to read, and then I just happened to look across this book and I thought, okay, this is going to be perfect because it's one of those, it's Edgar Allan Poe, so nothing in his work is always, very few things are what you think they are. They always end up being something else. But this is one where it's right there in front of you and you still don't know what it is, right? It's mm-hmm. Like, what does that quote the Raven Nevermore mean, right? So anyway, I'm just going to read a little bit of this. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered, weak and weary, over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping, as of someone gently rapping, rapping at my chamber door. "'Tis some visitor," I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. "'Only this, and nothing more. Ah, distinctly, I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow, sorrow for the lost Lenore, for that rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'Tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. Some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more.' Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. 'Sir,' said I, 'or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more.'" So that's just the beginning of that. But I love, it's like the greatest, I mean, it's not the greatest poem. But when I was a kid, this was the greatest poem.
Did your mom just have this book, like, hanging out?
No,
like Macbeth.
No. Actually, oh, this is a great story. So, my sister and I actually learned this poem from Mad Magazine.
Oh my gosh!
they had each. It was like each panel was a verse, mm-hmm. and I mean, it was just really, really cute. I just remember they had a sight gag where there was this puppy, and in each panel, the puppy got bigger and bigger until basically the guy in the chair was, you could barely see him, and the big dog was sitting there. Filling up the panel. But yeah, no, we learned that from Mad Magazine.
Oh my gosh.
I learned so much stuff from Mad Magazine. Like, I learned The Sound of Music from Mad Magazine.
Thank you so much for being with us and exploring this world of literature on so many different levels as we talk about how our journey with reading has shaped in our lives.
One of the things I love about this podcast is that we can just talk about things that we love. And it's so... for me, it's just really interesting to just share this with you, mm-hmm. but also knowing that a bunch of other people will be listening to it that we don't know. But thank you so much for listening to us and for going along with this.
And please get to know us. You know, reach out to us on social media and let us know what you think and what books you're enjoying. And we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed the magic that has unfolded here at Witchy Wit.
Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Witchy Wit Podcast.
Email us at witchywit123@gmail.com. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get exclusive content and support us on Patreon.
Stay witchy, y'all.